Kim Kardashian has been in break the internet mode ever since her not-so-conventional rise to fame. Through her millions of tweets, posts, Instagrams, Snapchats, and keeks, yeah, a keek is a thing, you get a pretty good sense of who she is and what she owns. And in October 2016, during Paris Fashion Week, robbers used her social media check-ins as intel before making off with a reported £9 million in jewelry and phones. On this episode of the Oxford Sparks Big Questions podcast, we are looking at the prophetic example of Kim K and asking, how do we stop our social media obsession from making us a target for crime? Hello, I'm Emily Elias, and this is the show where we seek out the brightest minds at the University of Oxford. And in this episode, we force them to talk about the Kardashians and science. Tasked with this daunting challenge is Dr. Jason Nurse from the University of Oxford's Department of Computer Science.
Have you ever seen an episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians?
No, I have not, unfortunately. Never one.
We met in a coffee shop in Oxford, and right away, Jason pulled out his handy computer and brought up a PowerPoint presentation. He's a man who loves a good slideshow and is just recovering from a crash course in Kardashian 101.
And I mean, when you think of it, she has about 48 million followers. So those people would have seen it. Anyone that publicly views her feed would have seen it. So then they use that information to then find out where she was and then burgle her. Because basically they went to her and they said, ring, ring, ring. And they knew she had a ring and they wanted the ring and they basically got it in the end. So yeah, there's a big question about why do people post so much? Celebrities do it, but kind of normal people do it as well.
As for those normal people, I gave Jason an assignment. I asked him to look up my social media and see what he could tell about me.
I found out some quite interesting stuff. If we look at Twitter, I might guess that you live in that general area or not. Yes? Oh, that's correct. Okay, good. And what about Reggie? How's Reggie doing?
Reggie's great.
Reggie's great. He looks so nice. He's so cute. Yeah, so cute. I feel for him really. In the summer, it's really hot, and I can tell he was struggling.
He's a giant greyhound. He can't cool down.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's you know, really tough. Birthday.
You got it.
Birthday's correct.
You nailed it. That's
oh,
my birthday.
Oh, man, I know your birthday. Wow. And then what about shellfish? Oh, my goodness. That would... Oof.
Down to my shellfish allergy, Jason got me. It's really hard to explain the tightening in my chest as he kept rattling off information. Jason is a stranger we have never met before, and yet he is casually tossing out details of my life, including what would be the best time to rob me. And I like to think that I'm careful on social media. It's like when you go to a psychic or you see a magician and you're in this state of, how do they do that? But the reality is, all of this information was low-hanging fruit that any stranger could find out about me. And while this may be bad, it's not nearly as shocking as what some people are willingly sharing online.
Well, I think the craziest thing I've seen is there's a feed called Need a Debit Card, a Twitter feed, and that is pretty crazy because what you have there is that tries to find or that has recognized that people actually are posting online their credit card and the debit card, the front of it. But also there's actually been instances of people actually turning around the card and taking a picture and posting it on Twitter as well of the back of the card. So they expose not only the number, the credit card number at the front, but also the CVV at the back of the card, which can of course be used for fraud or purchasing in someone else's name. Another instance you got, which is something that actually kind of somewhat encourages that, but which in a weird way, I'm sure that the banks didn't think that this would be a problem. But some banks actually offer you the ability to customize your debit card. So they allow you to take a picture and basically have a picture kind of overlaid on the front of your card. And what people have actually done is people have said, oh, this is really cool. And they've taken a picture of the card with, you know, a picture of, you know, someone and their friend or something, or someone and their kid, and posted that on Twitter and said, oh, look at me, look at my new cool debit card. But then when you think, are you recognizing that you're also sharing your debit card number? Do you not recognize that this can be used for bad? You know, someone can actually rip you off, scam you. There's so many things that bad could happen, but people just don't recognize that.
And if the baddies manage to take your card and glean your address and look at your Facebook page and find out what your birthday is, you could be in real trouble.
Facebook users share about 2.5 billion pieces of content, and this is each and every day. Think about that, 2.5 billion pieces of content, posts, pictures, likes, favorites, all this kind of stuff. On Twitter, it's probably roughed around 500 million tweets per day, 500 million. And then on Instagram, you get about 400 million photos shared. I mean, why people do it? I would say there's a bit of peer pressure in it. People do it because their friends are doing it. Some people do it because they feel like anything they do in the offline world, they should be kind of portraying an online. People are kind of worried about keeping up an online reputation of sorts. And for some people, that's about sharing every and anything you do.
But there are some instances where sharing all of this data could be a good thing. Not everybody is out there to scam you. Social media builds communities, friendships, the economy. There is a reason why we post, and in case of emergency, social media can also be a lifeline.
Is something called Facebook Safety Check. And this is a kind of a system that Facebook implemented so that if there's a crisis or if there's something happening in a particular area, what they can do is they can set it up or turn it on, let's say, and what you can do is you can say that I'm in this area and I'm safe. And that would kind of be broadcast, or that would be informed to your friends on Facebook. And same thing for your friends. They can broadcast it and you can know. So the benefit there is that if you're in some place and let's say communication is down or networks are down or something like that, but you can actually access Facebook maybe via Wi-Fi or via something, then you can actually let your friends or family nearby know, hey, I'm safe. And you can also monitor both people that are around you, maybe friends that are near to you that might not be safe.
Jason takes his the good, the bad, and the ugly of social media talk to schools to help make students more social media literate. But as we shift towards the age of the Internet of Things, where everything in our home is kitted out with smart electronics, he says everybody needs to understand what information they're putting out there.
There's kind of a number of security and privacy issues around Internet of Things. So let's say one of the biggest things of, it can be simple devices such as kind of smart watches, such as this one, or it can be a number of the kind of smart home devices. And what we're trying to look at there is the security and privacy risk associated with these devices, because more information is gathered on us based on our devices. There can actually be a leakage of information that we might not know about. Let's say, you know, all of us had to implement smart homes. So this is a home where everything is all connected from the toaster to the fridge to the door lock. It's actually a number of pretty cool, I would think, locks for doors now that connect by Bluetooth or that you can unlock remotely. So let's say you're away for 2 weeks and you want to let your neighbor interfere your cat, you can actually unlock the door remotely and let them go in. So this is possible. This is all good to go. So there's a number of risks related to that. So for example, in that instance, well, what if a criminal actually got access to somehow hacked to be able to hack your door lock? Then they can get into your home. Or what if the flip side, the criminal got access but they decided they don't want to let you into your own home? That's a real problem. Or even if they can manage to tap into what's happening in your home, they might actually be able to see, okay, well, the heating hasn't gone on for some time, or they haven't opened the fridge for a number of days. Maybe they're not at home. So then there's kind of risk related to that, because then they can actually start to profile you and know when you're at home versus when you're not at home.
Then there's the matter of corporate espionage. Let's talk about this in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory terms. The kids wouldn't have to go and report back to rival Mr. Slugworth with a vague concept of what's going on inside Wonka's factory or any of the information about the everlasting Gobstopper. In modern times, they could use their smartwatches to record it, share their GPS, take photographs.
And therefore, you have this case where employees might come in, and whether they are your employees or their contractors or their whoever, they might come in and they might actually be able to steal information, exfiltrate information, record sensitive conversation, all with no knowledge at all, because we're just not set up, or organizations are not really set up to consider those risks as yet. We're trying to kind of more still battle with the usual risks. But Internet of Things is really going to change the game for everyone.
And as we hurtle towards the future, Jason says we need to think about our technological footprint. All of us, including one Kim Kardashian.
If you're going to do the book club, let me know. Because I really, those type of books are kind of really my style. So me and your friends could get together and we can read some books together, man.
Perfect.
Okay, awesome.
This podcast was brought to you by Oxford Sparks for the University of Oxford, with music by John Lyons. And a special thanks to Dr. Jason Nurse. If you want to see a really cool animation about Jason's research, we've got that on our website, oxfordsparks.ox.ac.uk. And please tell us what you think about this podcast. You can reach out to us on Twitter. We're at @OxfordSparks. You could also find us on Facebook. I'm Emily Elias, and until next time on the podcast, when we ask, what can adult contemporary power ballads teach us about the life cycle of a fruit fly? Bye for now.